Chapter 48. Curtis Mayo sat at a desk amid the studio mock-up of a busy newsroom and peered at the television monitor slightly to his right and below camera number two. He was 10 minutes into the evening news and waited for his cue after a commercial advertising a bathroom disinfectant. The 30-second spot wound down on a New York fashion model, who probably never cleaned a toilet bowl in her life, smiling demurely with the product caressing her cheek. The floor director moved into Mayo's eye range, counted down the last 3 seconds, and waved. The red light on the camera blinked on, and Mayo stared into the lens, beginning the B-segment of his news program. At the president's farm in New Mexico, there have been rumors that the nation's chief executive and the vice president are using look-alike stand-ins. As Mayo continued his storyline, the engineer in the control booth cut to the tape of the president driving the tractor. These scenes of the president cutting alfalfa on his farm, when viewed close up, suggest to some that it is not him. Certain famous mannerisms seem exaggerated. Different rings are seen on the fingers. The wristwatch is not the one he usually wears. And there appears to be a casual habit of scratching the chin that has not been noted before. John Sutton, the actor who bears a striking resemblance and who often imitates the president on TV shows and commercials, could not be found by reporters in Hollywood for comment. Which raises the question, why would our nation's leaders require doubles? Is it a secret security procedure, or a deception for darker motives? Could it be the pressures of the job are such that they have to be in two places at the same time? We can only speculate. Mayo let the story dangle on a thread of suspicion. The engineer in the booth switched back to the studio camera, and Mayo went into the next story. In Miami today, police claimed a breakthrough in a string of drug-related murders. After the program, Mayo smiled in grim delight when informed of the hundreds of calls flooding the network news offices asking for more information on the president's double story. The same reaction, if not far heavier, had been pouring into White House phone lines. In a spiteful sort of glee, he wondered how the presidential press secretary was taking it. In New Mexico, Sonny Thompson stared blankly at the TV set long after Mayo left the air. He sat collapsed in his chair, his flesh the consistency of blubber. He envisioned his carefully nurtured world slamming to a rapid end. His peers in the news media were about to crucify him on a cross of sensationalism. When he was proven an accomplice to a conspiracy to deceive the American public, no newspaper or TV network would ever hire him after his looming White House departure. John Sutton stood in back of him with a drink in one hand. "The vultures are circling," he said. "In giant flocks," Thompson muttered. "What happens now?" "That's for others to decide." "I'm not going to jail like Liddy, Colton, and those other guys," Sutton said nastily. "Nobody's going to jail," Thompson said wearily. "This isn't Watergate. The Justice Department is working with us." "No way I'm going to take a fall for a bunch of politicians." Sutton's eyes began to take on a greedy gleam. "A guy could make thousands, maybe a few million out of this." Thompson looked at him. "How?" "Interviews, articles, and there's book rights royalties. The possibilities for making a bundle are endless." "And you think you're going to walk out of here and tell all?" "Why not?" said Sutton. "Who's going to stop me?" It was Thompson's turn to smile. "You haven't been told the reasons behind your employment. You have no idea how vital your little act is to our country's interests." "So who cares?" Sutton said indifferently. "You may not believe it, Mr. Sutton, but there are many decent people in our government who are genuinely concerned about its welfare. They will never allow you to endanger it by speaking your piece for profit." "How can those egomaniacs who run the funhouse in Washington hurt me, slap my hand, drag me into a volunteer army at age 62, turn me over to the Internal Revenue Service? No sweat on that score. I get audited every year anyway." "Nothing so mundane," said Thompson. "You will simply be taken out." "What do you mean, taken out?" demanded Sutton. "Perhaps I should have said disappear," Thompson replied, delighting in the realization that grew in Sutton's eyes. "It goes without saying your body will never be recovered."